From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
I don't know if you planned it that way, Tony. I'll give him credit. Give Tyler Devitt credit for playing the Mike Thomas Hail Mary play. Had he tagged it with My Sharona by the Knack, that would have been well played as an open on this post-Memorial Day weekend. Happy May 31st, everybody. Can we get nothing but one-hit wonder music on the program today? There you go. There you go. He's working it in the behind the scenes right now. Today we will talk about one-hit wonders. Honestly, it's Joe Namath's birthday. And I don't think Namath's a one-hit wonder.
No.
He's a five-time Pro Bowler. But without the guarantee of winning Super Bowl III, I don't know.
First
4,000-yard passer in a season. He's more of a borderline Hall of Famer, though, if he doesn't win that Super Bowl. And even if he wins it, Tony, if he doesn't guarantee it, I wonder how long it takes him to get in. As it was, he was a two-time finalist prior to getting in 1985. So that kind of sparked the thought process on the one-hit wonders this morning.
Sure, and I'm curious to see some of the answers we get. Obviously, I watched David Tyree. I'm sure we're going to get it.
He may be the ultimate one-hit wonder, right?
And I know about Timmy Smith and some of the other stories, but I'm sure, like, look, I've only been watching football since basically the early 90s. So the guys that have been kind of in that range, I may know some of the names. I'm curious to see some of the names we get before that I have to go back and look at. You know, what exactly are they remembered for? I enjoy these kinds of days where it's kind of like a football education for me a little bit to go back into the history of this game.
Originally, we were going to ask what is the all-time NFL one-hit wonder, but then we figured that would, you know, kind of cut things down. So we're trying to think outside the box a little bit. We've seen some good ones come down the line already this morning. Dwight Smith in the Super Bowl for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Remember Dexter Jackson won the MVP,
yeah,
right? That's all like, does he have him confused with Dexter Jackson? What did Dwight Smith do in that game? I couldn't remember.
They picked him off like six times.
He had two pick sixes, yeah, in the game. How did he not win MVP of the Super Bowl is what I want to know. Dexter Jackson had a couple of interceptions of his own in that football game. And, in fact, they had an online vote presence. It might have been the first time they did that. I was reading up on it this morning. And that put Dexter Jackson over the top. Had he not gotten the online segment of the vote to go for him, Simeon Rice would have been Super Bowl MVP. You wonder if that would have impacted his Hall of Fame outlook, right?
Right.
One of the all-time sack guys. You don't hear him mentioned as one of these guys that's just in the queue, waiting his turn to get into Canton, Ohio, yet he ranks pretty highly on the all-time sack list. Jags back on the practice field this morning after a holiday weekend. I didn't see reports of untoward shenanigans this weekend, which is good.
No,
right?
No news reports about the Jags this weekend. That's a good thing.
I'll take that on a holiday weekend. John Osier is out there on the practice field this morning. This guy's just out there getting underway week number two, hopefully easing their way back into things. So we'll talk with John coming up from Jaguars.com. We'll also talk with Brent Martineau, what he's seen out there through the first three-plus practices for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not a lot of specifics we can get into, but also we'll talk a little bit about what we heard from Gus Bradley last week. You and I didn't really get a chance to dissect that a whole lot. We sat down with Gus after the show on Thursday, ran that interview pretty late in the program on Friday. It's on demand if you go to 1010XL.com, Jaguars.com. You can always listen back to those if you miss any of that. And yes, for the tweets I'm just getting to this morning because I kind of ignore Twitter when I'm at home with the day off.
Yep.
We were off yesterday. Yes, we were. That's absolutely correct. So if you'd like to get in today, we got a variety of ways to do it. You can directly address the question of the day. Name one of the NFL's all-time one-hit wonders. That is a player known primarily for one play, one game, or one season. And you can give us a name and fill in the details as you see fit. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler, and also the Jaguars Today Facebook page is up and running. 641-1010 is always the phone line, and it's also the text line driven by Duval Ford. So hop on board, Jaguars Today. Just getting underway. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. Jaguars OTAs underway themselves this morning. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Didn't somebody pay big money for this phone number? I could have sworn I saw they paid. I don't know how you own the phone number. I don't know how that whole thing works.
Right.
right? But somebody sold the number, had the number, 867-5309, and sold it to somebody else. Tommy Two-Tone.
Wouldn't there be your
one hit?
I mean, where would this number be? Like, what area
I don't know.
Code?
I don't know. Does it matter anymore? I mean, I really don't know if it does. I don't know how that works. But I could have sworn somebody paid big money to get this phone number. Why you would want to get this phone number?
I don't know.
You know how many drunk people have called this number, right?
Countless.
This comes on a jukebox in whatever bar at
12:30 at night. It's a brilliant
idea. Let's call it, man. Is Jenny there?
Apparently back in 2013, the number was still ringing up to 50 times for a Florida realtor, Carrie Rout. She had a number 850-867-5309. That was her number.
And did she sell it? Do we know if anybody sold? I'm telling you, somebody sold this number, I want to say, for over $1 million. I could have sworn I remember reading that story somewhere along. I could be embellishing the whole thing. I really don't know. But why would you want it? Why would you want that number? I don't.
If you were a business, maybe.
I get no. She's not here. But can I sell you a house?
Right.
Right. I mean, I'm not sure how that would work. But John Osher could probably explain it to us because he knows all, and he's back from the holiday weekend, resplendent in his, what would you call that color, Tony? Kind of peach.
Yeah.
Kind of a peach.
If it was on you, it'd be Universe Miami.
You're a peach. You always think I'm wearing something that I'm not. I didn't realize. I understand.
That's a nice green shirt you got on.
You have
Mike.
red, green color blindness. You apparently have green gray color blindness.
I have whatever fits my joke for that day.
Is that what it is? Is that
what it's
become? That would you call that a peach shirt that you're wearing?
Yeah, I guess so.
Somewhere in that neck of the woods?
It's kind of fun. I'm a fun guy, you know?
You are. You're very
always
bright.
Kind of looking at the bright sides.
You are very bright. It's after Memorial Day. I think you're allowed to wear anything now. Is that
sure.
How that works?
I'm into that.
I very much stand on convention.
Like what you wear after Labor Day.
You'll catch me a plain white t-shirt before Memorial Day. Yeah.
No.
How are things out there?
Good. I can't tell you a thing.
I know. Gus told us last week what he tells Ryan Davis had an interception in practice. So
yeah,
we're going to talk about that over and over and over again today.
That's right. No, I mean, it is what it is. They all look, they're running around. They all look fast. I thought last week was interesting in that you saw, you know, Malik Jackson looks the part. Dante Fowler looks quick. Didn't look like he had any after effects of the ACL. All the things you kind of hope to see, you saw. But I think Tony Boselli said it best. You can't really – you can tell if a guy can't play this time of year. But I know Tony likes to say you can't really tell if a guy can play. So take all this with a grain of salt. It all looks okay, but it's still OTAs.
Yeah, I kind of chuckled this morning. I was reading over the NFL put up an article, or ESPN put up an article this morning of the 100 predictions that could have an effect on the 2016 season. And one of them was that Giants players are saying that Jason Pierre-Paul looks vastly like a completely different person than he did at this point last year. And my first thought was, well, they didn't see him at this point last year. And it's an OTA. He should look pretty fantastic. The guys that are athletes are going to stand out on that football field right now.
You know, sometimes you can see a guy who's clearly been working out, who's clearly fired up. Maybe he has an extra bounce of energy because he's coming back from something. But again, you're talking about 4 weeks in shorts and then a couple of months or a week, I mean, 5 or 6 weeks off until you get to training camp. So it's cool. It gives us something to write. You'd rather have him look good than bad this time of year. But I wouldn't sit here and worry at 11:10, Mike, that you're missing a whole lot.
I don't.
Don't fret.
That's why we have you.
I know you're a big fretter, but don't fret.
Not really. Not when I got told Hicken a few minutes ago, I don't care if they're installing anything. Don't get hurt.
Yeah, and that's the big thing. But it certainly looks like a team that when you look at, you know, as you stand on the side and you try to figure out what you're writing for that day or what you're going to talk about for that day, there are certainly more guys out there that look like they could be big-time players. And some of that's the reputation that you know they have. When you see Malik Jackson and Jared Odrick and Dante Fowler and those guys all line up next to each other, you think, okay, there are more guys at the defensive line group, more guys at the linebacker group that you can envision being good and that you know other teams have to account for. And so it certainly looks like a better team than it's looked like in the past, which it's supposed to because they've been building toward this time.
Right, and you'd be in big trouble if it didn't look that way right now. Gus Bradley, when he spoke with us last week, talked about Marquise Lee stacking up practices and just, you know, not don't get crazy with it, but let's see him stack up three more and then three more after that and that kind of thing. John, I know they talk competition all the time, but I think there's certainly some politics as to where guys get selected in drafts and things like that. Do you think in a perfect world that they hope Marquise Lee earns a spot as one of the top three receivers, or does it matter to them whether it's Rashad Green, Lee, or anybody else?
Well, I think at this point, you're what, 3 years past the 2014 draft, or three drafts past it, if you will. I guess if the rest of the draft hadn't been what looks like off the charts really good, they might be worried about that sort of thing. Oh, we need this guy to develop. I think right now they really want Marquise Lee to develop and be the kind of player they think they can be for on-field reasons, meaning if he develops and is the kind of player they think they can be, you hear them say it all the time, he still has something that they don't have otherwise, meaning that incredible quickness, the ability to take the top off the defense. He is still a playmaker with the speed on the level that they don't have. So I think in that respect, yes, they want him to be able to win a job. I don't think it's necessarily, oh, he was a second-round pick in 2014.
He was a second-round pick because of certain attributes, and that's why they want him.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely want him to show that he's good enough to merit having multiple packages with him on the field. And he's got to merit that because I think doing that means moving Hearns around a little bit. I don't think they're going to put Marquise in the slot. So in order for him to merit it, you have to have Hearns away from what he was doing a lot last year. So I do think Marquise has to earn that. They're not just going to throw it out there next season as, well, let's see if this happens. I think he has to have shown that he's has been consistent enough that they're going to get production out of that package rather than just sort of give him that time.
At this time last year, anyone who went out to any of these practices would come off saying that Julius Thomas was the best player on the field during those OTAs, during the
offseason. By pretty far. Allen Robinson made a lot of strides this time of year, if you recall. But
he did?
Yes, everybody was talking Julius Thomas, and you figured he was the guy.
What does he look like here in the first week or so? Does he look like the player he looked like last offseason? Obviously, the injury set him back early last year.
Yeah, so far. And again, you're talking three OTAs where you're watching guys run around. But he looks like he did last year in the sense that he's a fast, quick guy who, when you look at him, you envision being a really good red zone player and being a productive guy. I think he contributed more last year than the stats showed. I think there were times where defenses had to pay attention to him. He was a threat. But if you listen to Allen Robinson, Blake Bortles, Allen Hurns, the key guys in this offense talk, it's interesting to hear how much they praise Julius Thomas. And it's the sort of praise where it's praise, but they know Julius doesn't need praise. He's done it already. You get a feeling talking to these guys that they see things in this offense that are going to be really emphasized that Julius can do really well. They think Julius Thomas is going to have a big year next year.
Let's look at the offensive line as much as we can through the eyes of just a week of practice. From what you hear and what, you know, I know you guys had Brandon Litter on .com Live, I believe, last week. Is that right?
No.
You didn't?
No. who did we have? We had Malik Jackson, that guy.
Okay.
And the week before, we had
I know JP was doing an interview with Kellen Beecham. At least I thought he was. Maybe I thought it was for .com Live.
I think it was for the JP Shadrick podcast.
Oh, is that what it was?
Which he won't let me have anything to do with. He does it in a secret room.
Move. Probably a good move on
his
part.
Closet.
Probably a good move on your part, too.
Yeah, we try to stay. Yeah.
But from what you can tell, Linder's acclimation to center, how's it going?
Yeah, I never thought that it would be difficult for him. Again, it's very tough in a non-contact to judge how the center's doing. But from everything that you want to hear in terms of adapting mentally, in terms of picking up the offense, in terms of doing the mental things that you need to do that position, which is a big part of it, as expected, they say he's adapting very well. You talk to people too, Mike. I have heard really no trepidation on anybody inside the building about this move. I know fans are concerned while he's moving guard to center. The feeling within the building is that this is tailor-made for him, and it's something where his skill set is going to be perfect. I haven't heard anybody worry that this is going to be a difficult transition for Brandon Linder.
This was Gus last week. We asked him about this specific topic.
I think it's gone really well. You know, sometimes when you make a move, you know Brandon Linder as a guard and his personality. You put a lot on the center's plate. Wiz last year did a lot of the talking, a lot of the conversation at the line of scrimmage. So you really didn't know Brandon Linder as a talkative guy on the line of scrimmage. So when he moved to center, with that being part of the game, it was like, okay, you know, what are we going to get? Boy, he's exceeded our expectations. And I think that he really studied it in the offseason. He really wanted to come in on the first day and own it, like we've talked about before, so that he can start that communication from day one. Done a great job now.
And probably only becomes an issue if he screws up at some point this year, right? I mean, that's a bad snap. We're going to talk about, oh, Brandon Linder is inexperienced snapping the football. Never mind the fact that Wisniewski had multiple bad snaps last year and had played four seasons.
Linder's an interesting guy in that if you've ever had him on the air, he's a very quiet guy, very reserved guy, not on social media at all. He told me once, I only have social media to post pictures of fish that I catch. I mean, that's kind of his MO. And he's a quiet guy in the locker room, but he's also a guy that when you talk to him for any length of time, there's an inner confidence there and there's a maturity. He doesn't talk because he really doesn't. It's not his thing. It's not that he doesn't have anything to say. And I think once he gets into this position and starts excelling, which I think he will, I think fans will hear more of him, and he'll be more outspoken in the media in terms of when he's asked questions, have an opinion on it. And I certainly think that will translate to the offensive line. I'd be very surprised if he's not already, but very quickly this season viewed as the unquestioned leader on that offensive line. He's that sort of personality. That's what you need in a center because he's calling the plays. He's the eyes and ears out there. Personality-wise, I'm not surprised that Gus is saying what he's saying about Linder taking over the role because that's kind of his MO.
You know, and it's interesting because it is the question I get most from fans on social media right now about this team going into the season is what's happening with the offensive line.
Right.
And I think at this point in OTAs, I don't know that it's all that important to have your starting five on the field together right now. I think once we get into training camp, it's important to know who you want that five to be and not have so much of the moving pieces. But this time of year, I think it's fine to have the moving pieces. But it is crucial if Brandon Linder is going to be the center for this football team for him and Blake to get on the same page.
Sure.
And that feels like what this can be a productive time for that offensive line is Linder and Bortles working together.
When Blake talked about this some last week, I guess they both live at the beach. They're each other's houses watching film. Again, I don't think that sort of communication, I certainly think it'll be better as time goes on because they're going to have experience together. I don't get the feeling that that is going to be an incredibly sharp learning curve. I think it'll be pretty good from the start. I think you do sort of know it's going to be Linder, Cannon, Parnell.
Right side, yeah.
Those three. And I've been saying for a long time, I think it's going to be some combination of Beecham and Jokel on the other side. I think that'll play out in training camp. But I think you've got your three on that side. That communication will be pretty well. And then it's going to be a matter of figuring out what's on the left side.
All right, John, our question of the day today has nothing to do with anything we've just been talking about. At least we don't think it does. And we asked folks today to give us somebody they think is one of the NFL's all-time one-hit wonders, whether that's one play that they're known for, one game, or even one season. Who jumps to mind, both from a Jaguar perspective and a broad NFL perspective?
One-hit wonder. Well, that's good. From an NFL perspective, Tyree.
Maybe the ultimate one.
Is that the one? That's
certainly one of them.
Joe Capp. How about Joe Capp? Big year in 69 for the Vikings.
Was that right?
Yeah. So I'll pull one for the old time.
Joe Capp seems like he's got some cachet as being a pretty good player, though, for a number of years. Is that not the case?
Had a huge year, sort of like an Earl Morrill-ish, you know, kind of came in and I don't think anybody expected the Vikings to be in the Super Bowl that year under Joe Capp. So
I'll take your word for it. He didn't play many years.
It was the only year he threw more touchdowns than interceptions in his career.
So Joe Capp, I'll stand by Joe Capp.
Yep.
As far as the Jags, it's a tough one. There may have been some I missed. one-hit wonders back in the day. I'm drawing a blank.
The easiest one's Rob Johnson.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I guess I'm a little partial to Rob. I liked Rob and thought he had a lot of ability. But certainly performance-wise, he had one game.
And look, he took Buffalo to the brink of the AFC Championship game. Were it not for the Music City Miracle, right? Wouldn't that have gotten him to the AFC?
No, that would have been the first round.
Oh, would that have been the divisional? Okay.
Yeah. So if he took him to the first round or the second round.
Didn't take him that far.
But that's the obvious.
You remember that game, Rob Johnson actually led, I believe,
a game-lead-taking
field goal drive, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I was in the airport flying to Seattle, so I missed that entire game.
They're trying to ice it with the field goal, I believe.
Yeah, and Rob comes to mind as far as seasons. I don't have one on Seattle.
Reggie Williams if you want to go for a season, right? I mean, he's a double-digit touchdown guy.
Is that right?
I know he started for a number of years, but he had the 10-touchdown season.
Which was the record last week. Yeah, he had caught, 35 passes something that year and 10 touchdowns?
Right.
It was something stupid. Yeah.
Everybody who was good in the 90s was pretty consistently good. I mean, their overall guys were pretty consistently strong, as I recall. There weren't a lot of guys who just flashed for you. It's why they were good for a while.
I understand.
I thought Stacey Mack. Felt like he had.
He had one really, really good year.
One year he scored 10 with almost 1,000 yards. Yeah. Next year he scored 9 touchdowns, but his yardage was somewhere in the 400s.
Does Gabbert's 80-yarder to Cecil count? Is that a one hit?
Can you name another hit?
Yeah, I mean,
sure. Sure.
That was a hit. Well,
less impactful one hit wonder. Yes,
if you're searching.
Agree. It's not quite on the David Tyree level, but from a Jack perspective, I understand.
It did not win a Super Bowl, but. It beat Andrew Luck.
I understand what you're saying.
What the heck?
Get out there because people are missing you and your peach on
some.
All right there.
I feel missed.
Thanks for stopping by.
All right, guys. I enjoyed it.
John Osier, Jaguars.com. Check him out daily and, of course, on Twitter at John Osier as well. Let's get a couple of quick calls in on this, Tony, before we go to break. Philip, out at the beaches. You're next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Quick thing on 867-5309, and I'll give you my one hit. Do you know that Joe Madden a few years ago, they were having a lot of problems hitting, and he just went with that for the lineup, the position number.
That's right. That's a good call, man. That is a very good call. I do remember that, yes.
Yeah, of course, there's no one or two, so he had to put the one or two in for the zero and something else. But anyway, my one hit, I was actually there. It was early 70s. It was probably 74 or 75. I was a young kid, but at the Sea of Hands game at Clarence Davis, the Dolphins were up on the Raiders about probably 10 points with 2 or 3 minutes left, something like that, and the Raiders came all the way back, and Clarence Davis caught a pass from Stabler. It's called the Sea of Hands game because Dolphins are like 3 guys around him, and he caught it for the touchdown for the winner. I think it was, I don't know if that was to go to the Super Bowl or the game before, but Davis was a good player, but he was, not spectacular.
Understood. We appreciate it, man. Thanks for weighing in, and that's a good call on Joe Madden with 867-5309. By the way, the internet tells me, Tony, it was somewhere between $200,000 and $400,000 somebody got back in 2009, depending on what story you read about how much that phone number sold for. So either way, it's a pretty penny. Let's get George in Mandarin before we break. Good morning, George. How are you?
I'm fine. How about you guys today?
Doing great.
Sounds like you got a little bit of what I got.
Yeah, I'm a little rough, man.
I got Frank Reich on my list.
Frank Reich for both college and pros, right? I mean, biggest comeback in NFL history for a long time.
Biggest comeback in collegiate and NFL
history, right? That's a good one. I guess he'd be a two-hit wonder, but from an NFL perspective, he would be a one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
I would say that qualifies for that game. What was it, Tony, 31-3, I want to say, something like that.
Yeah.
At the half for Houston up on Buffalo. George, thank you for the call. Coming up, Brent Martineau going to check in with us, and we'll find out what the latest is that we can't talk about from the practice fields with the Jacksonville Jaguars. All right, that's coming up. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. 641-1010 is the phone number if you'd like to get on board. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Joining us here on Jaguars Today, got a head coach. How was the first week of OTAs for you?
Well, I thought it went pretty well. The first day, I think, guys, especially those younger players, the rookies and some of the free agents, trying to get a feel for the tempo of practice and how we go through some things. So it was solid, but I thought the last 2 days now, they really picked it up. quick studies and, you know, participated very well as a whole team.
It's Brent Martineau's favorite band right here, Dexy's Midnight Runners. Brent Martineau, Action Sports, Sports Director, CBS 47, Fox 30, and now starring in the ensemble cast that is the Frank Frangie Show with Brent Martineau, Brady Ackerman, Amanda Borges, Big Country, and others. I was going to say, and others.
Come on, join the show.
I'm sure there have been a few since last I checked to come and go, for that matter.
We wear name tags.
How are things?
Things are good, man.
Nice little downtime this weekend for you?
Yeah, it's cool. It's kind of like realizing what holidays are now a little bit. You know, spend a little time with the fam and those kind of things. And it felt like a holiday weekend.
Yeah, I wondered, like, what is my wife doing this morning? Honey, you're going to be late. Oh, yeah. You work for a school, don't you?
Yeah.
You're done.
You're out. How about that? A lot of people don't know that. I mean, I think a lot of people have asked. They're already out. They're already out because Duval's not out until, I think, the 10th.
Oh, is that right?
Of June. But down to St. John's County, they restructured the calendar last year, and they're done. I kind of like it because it's more along the calendar of us. You know, when football begins and training camp begins, they go back.
Yeah. So that's fine with me. I mean, hey, my wife works hard, man. She has the summer off. I don't begrudge her. People are looking at like, Dempsey, shut up. You work 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I'm not sure my wife works hard, but I know she gets paid like nothing. So if she wants the summer off, it's fine.
Well, usually they go hand in hand, Tony, right? The less you get paid, the harder you actually work to maintain that job.
Increase those teacher salaries, please.
We heard Gus Bradley a minute ago just talking kind of the first week of OTAs wrapping up. I think the big thing is avoid major injuries, as we all know. But Brent, as much as we can talk about it, which is limited, what you see out there on the field, what are you looking for during these OTA practices?
Well, I've got it's funny how we always focus, I think, on the offense and a lot of these things, because you can see the 7-on-7 kind of value of it, and we can see people catch the ball and the skill position guys. And you know, I do remember last year everybody was like, wow, TJ Yeldon. Like, well, you can't really see much in the running backs. You know, I mean, I know he looks smooth
out
there.
He looks quick.
But so I was always a little, I always chuckled at that a little bit. But to be honest with you, I'm not really watching the offense as much right now as the defense. And I know you can't get after the quarterback, but I just like to see how they're going to put these guys on the field. And to me, that's going to be and continue to be my theme. I want to see it now, and I want to see it in August, and I want to see it in the preseason games. How are they going to utilize these guys and all this new talent that they have? And then you also can tell a little bit that they can fly around. I mean, we know on paper they've got speed and athletes all of a sudden, and they've got a lot of them, it looks like, and that's without Miles Jack and Jalen Ramsey. And I think you can see that part of it even in these type of practices.
I know you're talking about the defense as a whole, but you mentioned some of those guys on the front four,
yeah,
which Tony and I have talked a lot about. It's going to be one of the most competitive position groups on the football team. Gus, among others, talking of Sheldon Day last week for how he has stood out and how quick he has looked in these practices. Who's a guy? Is there a guy that most people would take for granted that is a lock for the roster that you think, whoa, hold on a second, this competition is going to be better than you think it's going to be? Because I think it will come down to a numbers game. You start listing Ryan Davis now as a linebacker, so you're kind of fudging with the numbers a little bit. But is there one vet that needs to really bring it over the next few months?
Well, I think with all the additions, I do believe they want to see, and I don't think he's in danger of not making the roster, but from a playing time and impact standpoint, I do think there's a curiosity in Cenderic Marks coming back from injuries. And I love Cenderic. He's probably my favorite guy out there. But I just don't think you can assume he's going to be, you know, playing 40 snaps a game. I just don't. Not with what they built there, not with signing Malik Jackson and adding Day and guys like that, and Michael Bennett's still a contributor there. Where do they factor him in? And I'm not going to highlight him. I think Michael Bennett's kind of on the edge. I mean, certainly because of all the depth there. I think the other guy could be a Dan Scuda type, you know, in that Ryan Davis battle. I'm not pinning these guys on necessarily saying they won't make the team.
I
just think from the impact of where they had been last year to where you might see them going into the season this year, I think those are where the battles are at. You know, more the curiosity for me is how they utilize the guys we pretty much know are going to be on the team. You know, you could sit here and say, you know, I guess if for your question, Mike, you could also say a guy like Tyson Alualu. I mean, but I don't think that registers a whole lot with the fan. You know, if Tyson Alualu didn't make the roster or something, I'm not sure everybody would be up in arms. You know, that wouldn't be a stunner.
Wouldn't that surprise you, though? It would surprise me.
Surprise me if he doesn't make the roster, but I just don't think it would resonate with the fan base a ton. I mean, I think you're looking for a bigger name in the question you asked, and I just think it's more about playing time more so than making the roster. You know, who's going to get in there in those spots? That's what has me fascinated about how Todd Walsh will use this defensive front and the pieces to the puzzle he has.
And it's curious, you know, they move Ryan Davis to that auto spot, which is a strong side linebacker. And look, he's being put there because he's an effective pass rusher for this football team too. And that's kind of what Scooter gives him at that position. It feels like it's going to be Miles Jack's position probably for the first couple downs. So it would be somebody that they're putting on the field on third down to go get this done on that specific play. So it's more like a pass rush position, which makes me think that one of those two guys probably are in danger. It also tells you a little bit about how they actually feel about their linebacker depth on this football team right now. Because, yeah, you're bringing in Miles Jack, and you got to feel good about the three guys you're going to have on the field in your base package with those guys. But behind that, Miles Jack feels like he's probably the most reasonable guy to say he's the backup at middle linebacker. He's the backup at the weak side linebacker. He can do all three for you. But beyond him, what do they really have at that linebacker spot? Because it really didn't get addressed that much beyond Miles Jack during this offseason.
You know, and it's been a position that hasn't been addressed in really the Dave Caldwell regime very much. You know, I mean, they did obviously add Scooter last year, but that became interesting because of the injury. And then they said, well, we didn't have him rush the passer enough. And now they create this position. You know, Telvin Smith was a great pickup, but they never, outside of now Smith and Jack, they haven't really invested in youth in that linebacker spot very much. Instead, they tried to just fit in the pieces to the puzzle as a fourth or fifth guy and some special teams added value too. So I think they do like Pollard. I think they like him, and I think they see him in that spot as well. They kind of look at Jack, like you said, he can be our third, our fourth, and our fifth linebacker, right, in essence, because he can play all three downs in all three positions. So that's probably why they didn't go after a younger guy, maybe in the fourth or fifth round, Mike. They didn't have the fifth round pick, but maybe not another young guy in the draft.
And also, I mean, over the course of X many years, you figure out eventually they're going to address that. And they're trying to. I mean, they did bring in Scooter. They've taken some shots in guys like Dakota Watson that didn't pan out. But at the same time, in terms of significant draft capital, there are only so many positions you can address in any given year. So, like you said, they landed one with Telvin, we think, and Pozlesny's at least, I think, got another solid year left in him. He'd like to stick around for a while, he told us last week, beyond that, but who knows? That's kind of probably be out of his hands.
And that's one to watch, right? I mean, if Miles Jack comes in here and really blows people away,
I
don't buy that.
I can't imagine.
I'm not in that camp because I think because of his versatility, you still want Pozlesny on the field. And I'm telling you, these guys, and we know this, you've been around enough, they really buy into Pozlesny. I mean, it's a different team on the field on first and second down, even when he's not there. So
he brings value on the practice field. He brings value in the locker room. And
he's still a good football player, especially on first and second down.
He's still a good football player, right?
I love the fact that Miles Jack can get him off the field potentially on third down, but we'll see how that
takes. And there's still a pretty, you know, shallow unit, right, overall. So, I mean, I don't think you're casting off good players out of your linebacker core. Certainly Pozlesny is startable on this football team. You know, I don't think you have six of those guys right now.
No,
so,
you don't.
You know, it's interesting. Ryan O'Halloran, I don't know if he's changed his opinion on this, but when we spoke to him about it last, maybe a month ago, thinks that third down initially it's going to be Telvin coming off the field and Pozlesny staying on. I don't know if I'm buying that either.
I've heard that too. I think right around draft time we heard that, and that kind of startled me a bit. And I guess just because I didn't really think about it, because I got so wrapped up in the speed,
right?
The speed of Telvin. But the bottom line is this: if he's in the wrong place, and I think that was Ryan's point, and whoever else was talking about it at that time, if he's in the wrong place, not doing the right thing, speed doesn't matter,
right?
You know, so you've got to have a guy that's doing his thing, because then you play faster. And that's obviously Pozlesny's big advantage. He knows exactly what everybody's supposed to do and what he's supposed to do. But again, when you have that kind of speed and athleticism, you can cover up warts. And see, that's what's going to happen on this defense, in my opinion. They're young in a lot of spots on the defense in key players with Fowler and Jack and Ramsey. So they'll make mistakes. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is going to be able to take advantage of that youth a little bit, I think, in week one. But, man, that speed and athleticism covers stuff up, too. Some of those mental mistakes, I think it makes up for it. And you want those guys on the field because it's really hard, I would believe, to put a guy like Telvin Smith in that speed when you can couple him with Miles Jack on third down and put him on the sideline.
I agree.
I just don't see it happening.
All right, as we wrap up here with you and send you back out to the practice field today, we're talking about one-hit wonders, both either from a Jaguar or an overall NFL perspective, whether it's a play, a game, a season that stand out and really made that guy's reputation. Anybody leap to mind for you?
Well, you know, the first guy, and I'm sure I didn't listen to who else has been chiming in or see on your Twitter. Yeah, I said to you and Tim Tebow would come to mind from an NFL standpoint.
He's been mentioned by a number of people.
You know, for this season.
For me, that'd be a fright, more for one season. Some people have pointed to one playoff game, but to me, it's that,
it was season
that,
long.
Right, that season or half season, whatever, that run was.
Yeah, and it might be all he gets. It looks like it's going to be all he gets. David Tyree comes to mind, I think, from a play standpoint.
I don't know if there's a guy with a single play in NFL history, more impactful single play that is all he is known for.
I agree.
You know,
and listen, I covered the Giants when he was around a little bit early in his career, and so he was he was part of their mix, but he's never going to do anything.
I mean,
like
he
that.
Caught a touchdown the week before in the NFC Championship game, but nobody even talks about
nobody
that.
Nobody will ever remember. Yeah. Now, maybe the Giants fans do. I mean, maybe they remember that.
What is the most catches Tyree ever had in a season, would you think?
I would guess about 35.
I would take the under on that.
I
really don't know.
20s.
I'll tell you. I would have said, I might have even said 20 being my number. I'll tell you what it was here in a second. Just goes to show you, you know, you make that play on the right stage. 19. Was his high.
That was his high.
Yeah, 2006. Yeah. The year 2007 when they won the Super Bowl and they beat New England, he caught four.
Wow.
The whole year, four balls for 35 yards. So that was his season.
Well, then he's a good one.
Yeah.
For what you're looking for.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
I was trying to think back to like New England and guys like that, and I don't remember growing up trying to get one guy. Even Miami, the Dolphins, when I was rooting for them a little bit as a kid. But, yeah, so I'm not sure. I was actually looking up, you know, I thought might have been one, but, man, he's put together more numbers than I thought. Remember, Alfred Morris had that huge year in Washington. But he's actually compiled some numbers.
Yeah, he's stacked
like
them up.
Like a 4,000-yard season. He just grinds out 3.7 a carry, man, and they just give him the ball enough, and he's gonna get home. But he can enjoy carrying Ezekiel Elliott's
I thought of talking about
this year.
Running backs a little bit. Lamont Jordan.
Yeah.
Came to mind.
He had one really good year.
Yeah, and it felt like he had a couple other okay years, but was never that guy.
Right, he had the one big year with the Jets and then went to Oakland, right? Is that how it went? I think that got him a contract in Oakland as far as that
Couldn't
went.
You name about probably three running backs for the Denver Broncos?
Yeah, you're right about
like
that.
Landis Gary.
All right, Mike Anderson had 1,500 yards. Actually, Lamont Jordan, as I recall, got signed based on his potential. He didn't have the big year with the Jets.
He had a big contract. It was like 5 years, like $25
million.
And
his first year as a free agent in Oakland, I think he put up some pretty big numbers, and that was pretty much it for him.
Good question. I like that today.
What do you got coming up this afternoon? What do you
I'm heading back out to the OTA, and we'll catch up with Julius Thomas today a little bit. You know, something we're going to talk about with Julius, or we're going to ask him, we'll see. But we all know him for his hands, right, and his pass-catching ability, and that's what he is in the NFL, this modern-day tight end. But caught him earlier. You know, really working on the blocking part of it. And, you know, I just don't know if a guy like that, because he's so good in the passing game, even cares about his blocking. You know,
he probably cares about it to some degree, but he'll never be recognized for it.
Exactly. I wonder, I might talk to him a little bit about that in his role and how much he does that people don't even notice. And maybe he might be a guy that's better at it than people give him credit for. Or he's just got to really work at that part of it, in the offseason and this time of year.
All right, he is Brent Martineau at Brent AS Jax on Twitter. You knew that already, and you can hear him this afternoon with Frank Frangie and company, and you can catch him on CBS 47 and Fox 30 all the freaking time.
Happy summer, boys. Good to see you again.
Yeah, man, not even summer yet. We got about 3 weeks
to go. Hit him straight.
You know it. That's what it's all about.
Hot yesterday,
this time of year. We'll see you, Brent.
All right, guys.
Thank you, buddy. There he goes. Coming up, the State in Football and the Honda Drive around the NFL. It's Jaguars Today on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history for May 31st. Looking back through the years, Tony, and this is what got it started today, kind of on the one-hit wonder bandwagon. I wouldn't classify Joe Namath as a one-hit wonder, although he's most known for guaranteeing the victory in Super Bowl III for the New York Jets over the Indianapolis Colts. But certainly that is the season and moment and game that stands out for him. Joe Namath, born in this date in 1943, 73 years old today. There you go. And he's a big fan of Susie Colbert. He won the Super Bowl with the Jets, Super Bowl III, five-time Pro Bowler, one-time first-team All-Pro, and a Hall of Fame inductee in 1985. 1985, well, Joe was winning the going into the Hall of Fame. Jordy Nelson was being born. The Jags will face him in the opener this year. The Green Bay Packer wide receiver missed last season coming off a monster campaign in which he had over 1,500 yards, 13 touchdowns for the Green Bay Packers. 31 years old today, one-time Pro Bowler Jordy Nelson, and former Jaguar Tony. Remember, everything is Deuceable. Legay, Deuceable.
Oh, yeah.
Born on this date in 1986. Happy 30th to Legay. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Keenan Reynolds, who played quarterback for the Naval Academy, was drafted in this year's draft in the sixth round by the Baltimore Ravens, has officially been cleared to delay his military service and pursue an NFL career. The announcement was made during his commencement ceremony last Friday by the Secretary of Defense, Ashton Carter. Reynolds will be switching positions from quarterback with Baltimore. The Ravens are going to try using him as a wide receiver and kick/punt returner. The New York Jets reportedly have an offer out to quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick for 3 years and $24 million, with $12 million of that guaranteed in the first year. Fitzpatrick, who is reportedly looking for something in the $15 million a year range, doesn't appear to be ready to accept $12 million in total for the last 2 years of a deal at this point. It is not clear how much of that gets that figure of $12 million over the last 2 years would even be guaranteed to Fitz. Rich Samini predicted this morning on ESPN.com that the standoff between the Jets and Fitzpatrick will last until just before training camp, but he expects that Fitzpatrick will eventually re-sign with the New York Jets. The Houston Texans have waived offensive lineman David Questenberry, who has spent the majority of the past 2 years battling cancer. The team is expected to place him on the non-football injury list if he is able to clear waivers. And news coming out here in just the last couple of minutes, the NFL and the city of Orlando have announced that they will have a press conference tomorrow at 2:45. It is expected to be where they officially announced that the Pro Bowl will be moving from Honolulu to Orlando. They're going to be signing a multi-year deal, reportedly, to move that to Orlando. So at least two. No one really knows how long it'll be yet.
But at least 2 years, yes, is what they're looking at right now, which we didn't know because we've seen it go to Miami for a year. We saw it go to Arizona for a year, and each of those years that tied in with the Super Bowl being hosted in that city, be it the Miami or South Florida, however you want to refer to where they actually play the game. But I do think it's not a bad thing for Jaguar fans if some of your guys make the Pro Bowl and they're not in the Super Bowl. Let's go right down the road and check them out, right? I mean, as opposed to how many people are making that trip out to Honolulu,
right,
other than Balls Davis every other week, I think, is how that whole thing works out. God rest his soul. Keenan Reynolds is an interesting story. You know, on the one hand, I wonder if there's resentment from anybody else in the armed services, you know, who goes through the academy and goes, wait a minute, my military service isn't being deferred, so I can go play in the National Football League. But from the Navy's perspective, what better way to highlight what Keenan Reynolds is all about and what kind of guy he is and letting him play on the big stage in the National Football League, where he's going to get a lot more publicity and draw a lot more positive coverage. I understand why the Navy does it, why they make exceptions. I guess that's life. Life isn't fair. You try to teach your kids that. And, you know, certain people in certain circumstances get preferential treatment. And it's not like, you know, he did anything wrong. I'm sure, you know, other Navy guys would probably accept this deferment as well for the opportunity to go make money at their chosen profession, whatever they imagined doing after their naval career. But, you know, it's just an interesting dynamic when you go into it. You know, you go in knowing you've got to give X amount of time to military service. He'll probably do a lot of recruiting stuff, I would imagine. You know what I mean? Make a lot of appearances and things like that.
I'm sure he will. And look, this is a guy that I thought he should have been invited to New York for the Heisman ceremonies last year. I thought he was that good.
Didn't even get invited to the combine,
right?
Did he?
No, for Navy last year. I mean, he was a dynamic playmaker for Navy and has been for the last couple of years. I'm interested to see what he looks like, but it is a great recruiting tool for the Naval Academy, so it makes sense. I mean, I don't think anyone had any real doubt when he was drafted in the sixth round that the Navy eventually was going to say, yes, you can go try to play in the National Football League. I just couldn't see them telling their quarterback from the Naval Academy that, no, you're not allowed to go pursue this. I just couldn't see
that. Is it because
happen.
He's a quarterback? Because didn't Detroit have a guy a couple of years ago?
He's a high enough, like, it's everybody knows kind of who
he's
Keenan
a high
Reynolds
enough profile
is.
Guy,
yeah.
You're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and that's I guess what it boils down to. I just wonder if there's any if they're you know they're all like, hey, go Navy, we're rooting for you, or some of those guys are like, hey, wait a minute, you know what happened to?
I'm sure there's probably a small group of them.
Yeah, I'm sure there are,
but I imagine it's a small group.
Who did he end up with the all-time collegiate touchdown record? He and Kenneth Dixon were going back and forth.
I'm not sure who wound up with
whoever played it was, earlier in the bowl game set the record and then had it broken. I want to say it was Dixon who set it or. Passed Reynolds, and then Reynolds ultimately passed him
in
the Navy
right.
bowl game. I think that's how it ended up.
But it was whichever one of them played last set it.
Right, and they both ended up with the Ravens, by the way. So that's a lot of touchdown capacity being added to your roster. If you'd like to get in today, 641-1010, both the phone line and the text line, driven by Duval Ford, and we'll look back at some of the texts coming in. A lot of them weighing in on the question of the day this morning, and you know, as somebody pointing out on the text line right now, Roger Staubach served before playing. Yes, he did. A lot of guys did back in the past, but times have changed, you know, and since then. And I'm talking about more now, you know, in modern day. I don't think you hold him to the Staubach standard necessarily. You talk about the guys that are his peers coming out in recent years. Have they been allowed to follow this path to the National Football League as well? Or is Keenan Reynolds getting a little bit of preferential treatment because of the visibility and the position that he played, like you said?
Yeah, I was reading a little bit about that Staubach thing last week, and apparently Gil Brandt, who was working for the Cowboys at the time, they had drafted Roger Staubach, and they were sending him footballs overseas so that he could continue to throw. Like, wherever he was, they wanted him to continue to be able to throw, so they were actually trying to get him to train while he was doing his military service at the same time. It was kind of fun to read.
Nothing wrong with having a football to toss around with the boys, right? Especially if the Dallas Cowboys want to send you a fresh batch, and you can be a popular guy on the base, I would suppose. Coming back, Tony, we'll hear a few of the highlights of our discussion with Gus Bradley, if you missed it, on Friday, where he goes in-depth on some of the individual players that have caught his eye, at least through the first week of OTAs and the offseason up until this point. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We're live at EverBank. Love to have you part of the program at 641-1010. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. I get no
doubt. It took me a second.
Like, Chumbawamba.
Yeah, what are we listening to? They've done nothing else of note, is that right?
I don't even know if they had another radio signal.
Is that, you mean radio playable song?
I don't think they did. Like, I have some friends of mine that have, like, Chumbawamba albums, and I always ask them why. But it's this song. It's still everywhere.
I'm guessing they have it because they thought that they would have other good songs on the album.
Right.
Like, you love that one, and you're like, oh, I got to get the album.
I'm talking multiple albums by this
multiple
band.
Ones.
I wouldn't have even been able to tell you they recorded more than one album.
Maybe they like their stuff that, you know, wasn't ready for airplay. I don't know what to tell you. But I couldn't come up with another song by then. I couldn't have named Chumbawamba, by the way. At least I don't think I could have, so... There you have it. I'm looking quickly on Wiki, and I don't see anything to add to it. But I'll trust Tyler Devitt on the one-hit wonders today. That's what we're talking about to some degree today. One-hit wonders from an NFL perspective, be it a game, a season, a play. That really is what that player is primarily known for. And no, Duval Doom, your hatred of all things Houston Texans, it continues to shine through. Jadeveon Clowney's not a one-hit wonder. Okay, and somebody followed up on Twitter saying, yes, he's known for, at J.W. Drake said, yeah, he's literally known for that one hit that he made against Michigan, I'm taking it to be. I don't remember what the running back's name, where he blew him up in the backfield. Of course, prior to that, he was an All-American with 13.5 sacks, 23.5 tackles for loss. If you want to say one season wonder, fine, even though he had 8 sacks as a freshman in college. He certainly didn't do anything as a junior with 3 sacks, hasn't done anything of note in the National Football League. He's not a one-play wonder. He may be a one-season wonder if you want to go that far, but I wouldn't go a one-play wonder for Jadeveon Clowney. Let's hear a little bit from Gus Bradley. Oh, by the way, a couple of quick things. One, Keenan Reynolds did surpass Kent Dixon, 88 to 87 touchdowns. Tyler had that for me right before we took the break, but I didn't notice it there. So that's what we were talking about on the other side. And let's get Lucas in Gainesville to clear the phones, and then we'll get to Gus Bradley, some of his comments on some of the individual players catching his eye at OTAs. Good morning, Lucas. How are you?
Hey, doing well. Obvious one-hit wonder, Kevin Cobb. One season, got him paid. I'll move on.
Gotcha.
But do you think that it's an issue that you got Miles Jack, and he potentially, his best position is the position that your best linebacker plays, Kelvin Smith? Like, is it an issue that, you know, is it going to be an issue for him getting on the field? Because I feel like his second best position is Puz, and that's your second best linebacker. Your real opening is at the auto position. But, I feel like both the positions that he would be likely to play are kind of filled right now.
Well, I don't think it's a major issue because, they knew what they felt Miles Jack's strengths were, Tony, when they came into the draft and they selected him. You're not only drafting for this year, you're drafting for the long term. And I think a lot of us, myself included, think Miles Jack will be their long term middle linebacker.
Yeah.
And I think he's versatile enough that you find a way to get him on the field. I don't think it's a problem. You're adding a good football player. Now, I understand what you're saying is, you know, in a perfect world, you'd have everyone playing their strongest position. I don't know if they feel like weak side linebacker is the strongest position. He does so many things well. Maybe the number one thing he does well is cover the receivers, whether it be a tight end or a wide receiver, whatever. Usually you find your strong side linebackers, the ones covering the tight end, because the strong side is the side that the tight end lines up on. So I think they'll find ways to put him in roles that hopefully serve his skill set well.
And I think it's something we've talked about with John Osier specifically over the course of this offseason, is you almost have to stop looking at it as specific roles, especially when it comes to the linebacker positions with his football team. How much do they even play with the auto on the field? Honestly, they play, what, one out of three snaps with that guy on the field, which is why Miles Jack makes a ton of sense, because he can stay on the field whether you got three linebackers or two, because he's going to be their best coverage linebacker. He just is from the moment that he steps on the field. So he can take something away that they haven't been able to take away. I don't think you have to look at it as, oh, well, they already got these other two guys at these two spots where maybe Miles Jack fits more. I think they look at it as Miles Jack comes in and he's our best guy covering a tight end that we have on the football field from the moment that he arrives here. So he's going to be on the field when we need to take that kind of thing away, and you figure out what else you want to do with him, and whether that's eventually the replacement for Paul Puzlesny as the middle linebacker. If it means getting Puz off the field on third and long, especially where he's not having to cover anybody, I think it makes a ton of sense. But I look at it as you now have these three pieces. Each of them have their strengths, and you figure out based on the situation in the game, do you need to have all three of these strengths on the field at the same time, or can you kind of move these pieces around?
What is Laremy Tunsil's best position? We think it's left tackle, right?
Yeah.
He's going to play guard this year for the Miami Dolphins
because
they have Brandon
him.
Albert, right? Because they, and they took him 13th overall. You took Miles Jack in the second round. I mean, get as many good players as you can, get them on the field, find ways to use them. That's the coaching staff's responsibility, to find out ways to utilize these guys, and they knew what his strengths and weaknesses were relative to the other linebackers they had before they selected him. I think they'll find ways to get Miles Jack on the field, but I understand the reason behind the question, Lucas. I just don't have the concern with it. Thank you for the call. Let's get to Gus Bradley, who appeared with us last week, Tony. We talked to him after OTAs wrapped up for week one, and we talked about, speaking of the auto position, his use of Ryan Davis more in versatile ways.
We always saw the auto spot as an outside linebacker that has the ability to rush. He is a rusher that we're hoping has the ability to play outside linebacker, different than Scuda. So we just felt like, hey, he was a quarterback. You know, he has some athleticism. He picks things up really quick. We were actually looking at both him and Tyrone, as far as, okay, who can make this adjustment quicker to move to auto? And we just felt after watching him, we kept Tyrone at Leo, and we moved Ryan Davis to auto. And it's been a good transition. You know, I like that we've split him up. Scotty Hazleton has him. They're working more time with the D-line. Ryan Davis got a pick today in practice. You
nice.
Know? So, I mean, he's in a different world right there already than he was in the past couple of years.
Tyrone, of course, is Tyrone Holmes, the rookie out of Montana there as well. And Ryan Davis had an interception to beat Houston in the game, I think during his rookie year. He actually had an interception to end a game here in Jacksonville. So he's shown an ability at this level to even do that, playing that defensive end position for this football team. So maybe it makes sense for him to move to auto, and it probably makes sense for him just for some kind of stability on the roster. Because it feels like they got a lot of guys at that Leo spot right now. And Ryan Davis certainly is somebody that helps him on special teams as well. We also got the chance to talk to Gus Bradley, asked him about the Leo position where Ryan Davis is moving out of. A lot of youth there that they'll be depending on. Asked if Gus is concerned about that at all.
That is. I we'll see, because there's some uncertainty. You're not sure what's going to take place. You see it in practice. That's like Chris Smith. We saw it all the time in practice. Now you need to transfer it over to the game, and that's where he struggled a little bit. Hopefully he can do that this year. But, you know, those are unknowns with guys like Dante and Yannick, and, you know, we're getting Scooter and Ryan Davis more reps. So we'll see. But what we're seeing, you know, like I said, I think that the arrow's up, and we're excited to see, hey, let's get into that first preseason game and see how these guys do, because what they're showing on field right now, pretty exciting.
Gus Bradley here with us on Jaguars Today. Some comments from his interview with us late last week as we asked him to name a veteran, a returning Jaguar, not a free agent, not a rookie, that he thinks is ready to show a big improvement in 2016.
The guy that comes into mind is a guy like Neil Sterling. You know, probably a guy that not a lot of people are talking about. I don't know how Neil's going to do. We moved him. He's playing more like a position like Julius Thomas. So here you got a guy who's 240-some pounds that can run. He was a receiver, got good height, very athletic. So it's intriguing, you know, to see what takes place there. Right now he's got to do some inline blocking. We'll see how he does there. But he's over 240 pounds. So if he can hold up in there, he's a guy that, you know, that we've had that has really done some good things. You know, Marquise Lee, hey, three good practices, right? I mean, to come
we'll
out
take
of
it. We'll take
yeah.
it. Let's
and,
get three more
what?
Next
and
week.
And not only three good, I mean, where you see his explosiveness. We don't have a guy on our roster like that. And we've seen it 3 days in a row. So, you know, that's another good thing right there where, you know, you're seeing guys really step up.
I thought the Neil Sterling comment was interesting just because there's so much focus, and we're guilty of it as well, of the guy, the frontline guys is where we, you know, pay our attention. And for Neil Sterling to crack this wide receiver core, good luck, right, in getting any significant reps coming your way. But maybe as a tight end, maybe as a movable piece, you know, he is a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his moments out there on the practice field last year and, you know, didn't distinguish himself as a rookie, obviously. But, you know, these are the kind of guys that, you know, the coaching staff is looking at the entire roster of guys. And we're focusing in usually on that starting lineup and that first wave of elite backups. And Neil Sterling right now doesn't fall into that group, but he's a draft pick trying to make his mark on this roster.
And they certainly need some tight end depth on this roster, too. So there is an opportunity there for Neil Sterling potentially to make this roster, part of that 53-man roster. Gus Bradley joined us on Thursday last week after practice, talked a little bit about their first-round pick, Jalen Ramsey, who they had through the first couple phases of this offseason. But obviously the knee injury is going to keep him out until training camp, but had the opportunity to ask him about just how much progress Jalen Ramsey had already made. And he talked about him playing nickel early on.
You're right. A guy like Jalen Ramsey, when you look at him and you see him play corner and you go, boy, he could help us at nickel now. You know, you want to try to get him some reps at nickel, but you're a little bit careful and put too much on his plate. But the way he was picking up information, you know, I had a conversation with him about, you need to start looking at nickel. you need to start opening that play, because he really is a quick study. So as he goes and some of these players, how they go and they're receiving the information, will progress at the same speed as the coaching staff.
We're not concerned other than, you know, health-wise, just be out there, Jalen Ramsey. We're not concerned with his adaptation to the National Football League. I think he'll be fine. But, you know, there's no guarantees. Plenty of guys who've been top five picks haven't panned out the way the teams expected them to. But early returns before Jalen Ramsey tweaked his knee seemed to be that he, as Gus said, quick study, heading in the right direction as advertised as an athlete when they got him here. Sheldon Day, we mentioned him earlier. Gus singled him out for some praise last week as well.
Sheldon Day is a guy that I think probably is one that has really stood out to where you see his, you know, first step explosiveness, more of a penetrating type, but his quickness, he's caught our eye now. He's done a really good job, and I'd say of the whole group, he's probably a guy that's really, you know, caught our attention.
He's got some pass rush moves, there's no doubt, coming out of Notre Dame. Played a little defensive end up there as well. Again, my question with Sheldon is, is he going to be strong enough to back up Roy Miller a little bit at that spot, potentially on first and second down? He's big enough, I think, but is he strong enough to do that for this football team and get himself the opportunity to get a few more snaps, especially early on in his career? Gus also talking about, look, we ask a lot of questions about, you know, you challenge Blake Bortles in the offseason to go get this done. You challenge all these different guys. This is what I need you to do before we see you again when we get ready for phase one, phase two of the offseason. We ask Gus if he has those kind of challenges for himself as well going into an offseason.
Multiple conversations with people, just, you know, from practice, how to set up practice to how to best, you know, for mindset of players to, yeah, multiple conversations. We try to do that as a staff. We had a lesson for, well, I think it was 3 days where we tried to learn the staff better and also learn the players better. We went through that type of a deal. So, yeah, we do multiple things in the off season to try to help us. It's not just watching the tape.
All right, and Gus's clinic, by the way, for area coaches coming up this Thursday. I don't know if registration is still open, but you can check it out online. Go to jaguars.com/clinic. Whether you're a high school coach all the way down to middle school, if you're a football coach, you get to go to OTA practice this Thursday, watch it on the field, have lunch, and then the entire coaching staff is going to meet with the assembled coaches, have various Q&As going on where you can pick the brain.
It is closed,
right. So it's locked out. But, look, they probably capped it because they had such great interest. It's grown every year. It'll be fun to see how many guys show up for that this Thursday. One more, and we'll wrap up looking back on Gus Bradley after week one of OTAs, and it wouldn't be the Jags without asking about Blake Bortles and what kind of off season he's had.
We put quite a few challenges. I think he put them on himself. You know, not only just his own personal game, you know, understanding the offense, the technique, things that he needs to go through. So there's been a lot on his plate. He's really responded well. I think that he's learned through this off season. I think that last year it was specifically about his technique and, you know, what he needs to improve on. But he's really broadened that horizon. And I think that this has been a great learning off season. Sometimes that second year of playing, you see guys where we dump more on him because we figure, wow, he had the success that he had. Let's put more on his plate as far as football scheme-wise. We were careful not to do that. It was more really challenge him in other areas, and he's responded well.
All right, let's hope we continue to hear that. Stacking up those quality practices and weeks throughout the offseason for Blake Bortles and the rest of his teammates on the practice field. Probably just wrapping up right about now, as a matter of fact, with the players. Gus Bradley. It sounded like, from what John Osher said, Julius Thomas is going to meet with the media after practice today. You'll hear those comments throughout the afternoon right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. We'll look at your comments next on the Fan Feedback Spotlight today, asking you to give us one of the all-timers from the NFL perspective in terms of being a one-hit wonder, be it a one play that a guy is known for, one game, one season, you define it, and we'll go through some of the responses we got coming up in a moment. Live at Everbank in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios, Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith here with you. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Is this Soft Cell? I believe this is Soft Cell, right? Tainted Love?
I believe so.
Yep. Couldn't think of another thing Soft Cell did.
Nope.
Surprised I knew it was Soft Cell that did Tainted Love.
I know.
Proud of myself.
Marilyn Manson did a cover of this that did very well in the charts as well.
Did they?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then Tainted Love had two runs at it but
did.
Soft Cell only had one bite at the apple. Talking about one-hit wonders a little bit today, we'll get a call or two in before we get to some of the feedback we got on the various text line, Twitter, Facebook, what have you, and we got a bunch of them this morning. So let's go to, what do we got, Troy on the south side up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Troy.
Hey, good morning, man. How you doing?
We're good. What's up?
We're good. Hey, since we're talking about one-hit wonders, I got one in music, EMF, Unbelievable. And also, the guy that made the tackle on Bo Jackson that literally ended his football career. That's what I can think of, and we're going to take it off the air.
Who ended Bo? Do you remember who ended Bo Jackson's career?
I do not.
I don't either. Is that your Unbelievable? Is that the one we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. Who ended Bo Jackson's career?
I don't know.
What were you going with?
I was singing the song.
Oh, is that right? That's all I know. That's all I got for you. I'll take your word for it. on EMF. Man, that's the cover of Tom Jones. Isn't that crazy?
Is it really?
It is.
I had no
or did
idea.
Tom Jones do the cover of that? Maybe that was he probably did the cover of their song, is what I'm guessing. I remember Tom Jones. Actually, remember that Tom Jones video. Yeah, that's not Tom Jones. But back when MTV used to play videos. Is there a channel? Is there an MTV channel that still plays videos?
They bought, like, what was Palladia. So that was, like, the concert channel.
Never heard of it.
But, yeah, they like, all that channel shows basically is live music performances.
Live performances.
Yeah, and I think maybe occasionally on a break they'll show music videos or maybe, like, a block of music videos in the morning.
Because people still make music videos. Like,
oh, yeah.
If you go to YouTube and you want to look up a song, like, whoever did it, whatever, you see official music video for X song, right? Who, other than on YouTube, who sees these music videos, I guess, is my question. Maybe if I knew there were... You know, stations such as Palladia, channels such as Palladia, there are probably plenty of outlets where people watch them, and I'm just uninformed and behind the times, which is quite possible, and
right.
I can accept that. All right, Tony, what kind of feedback did we get today on Twitter in terms of one-hit football wonders, one game, one play, one season, you name it?
Well, if you're going to have a billion people watching your music video online, who cares if it's on TV anymore, which some of them still get. From Samuel, we got Justin Blackmon, his game versus the Texans. That's pretty good. He didn't do much besides that, and obviously
he had a few big games, though.
But from Lucas, we got Kevin Cobb for his couple of games. We've had him mentioned. Nick Folk didn't get mentioned, but I think should be. He had that one really, really good year in Philadelphia.
Not Nick Folk.
What's his name?
Nick Foles.
Foles, yeah.
Foles, yeah.
Foles. From Duval Doom, Jadeveon Clowney, we've already talked about that. From Cody, Ernest Graham, he had one okay fantasy season and one fantasy commercial. I barely remember. I looked at it. He had one really good year in Tampa, and the next year his yardage basically got cut in half, and beyond that, he rushed for more than 100 yards one more time in his career. And I think he played like 8 or 9 seasons, so that's a pretty good one. From Jarrell, he says, for the Jags, Natron Means from 96, he actually had a couple of really good years here in Jacksonville. From Irish Jaguar, a more recent one, Matt Flynn. We've talked about that a little bit. From Darnell, trying to come up with the Jags when Steve Matthews, who won his only start against the Giants, and Timmy Smith from the league.
I want to say Steve Matthews, they scored the most points in franchise history until they scored 62 against Miami, right? I'm pretty sure they set the single game points mark. I don't know how quickly it was eclipsed after that. With Steve Matthews at the helm. Justin Blackmon had that 236-yard game, and in 2012, that stood out like a sore thumb. There's no question about that. Averaged 33.7 yards per catch in that game. The following year, when he only had that four-game sample, remember he had the four-game suspension to start the year. He came back, had a 5 for 136, and had 14 for 190. So while it's not a many, many game sample, it's a little bit more than one, but certainly understand why you'd go down that road with Justin Blackmon.
The Steve Matthews game is interesting. They beat the Giants that day 40-13. Steve Matthews was 23 of 35 for 252 yards. No touchdowns. Didn't throw a touchdown.
And they scored franchise record points at the time.
Yeah, and they scored 40 points.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
hey, remember when the Jags had a running and passing game at the same time? Let's hope that comes to the fore this year. Speaking of which, going back to one-hit wonders, Stacey Mack has been mentioned many times. As Josh said on Facebook, he was looking like the next Freddie T in 2001. Actually had over 900 rushing yards, 9 touchdowns, caught a touchdown pass as well. But he followed that up with 9 touchdowns the next year. It's not as much in terms of yardage. It was more usage with Stacey Mack, but that's fine. Another vote for Blackmon, Timmy Smith. Certainly, in terms of one complete game, from an NFL perspective, maybe. I mean, you've got other guys that have won Super Bowl MVP. That was a pretty ridiculously. Did he ever have a 100-yard rushing game in his career? He had a 200-yard game in the Super Bowl.
Who, Timmy?
Yeah, Timmy Smith. I don't know if he ever had another 100-yard game in the rest of his career. Kenneth went with Rob Johnson for the Jags. Jason said, Tommy Maddox, he wins the XFL title, then a Super Bowl. What was he on that Super Bowl team? Was he on Pittsburgh when Roethlisberger was a rookie? Was that how that went?
Maybe.
I don't remember.
But they didn't go to the Super Bowl Roethlisberger's rookie year.
They didn't?
No. Whoever it was, Maddox or whoever got hurt, and Roethlisberger came in and went like 14-1 or whatever it was in the regular season.
And
they lost
to the
Patriots.
Super Bowl that year.
Yeah, they lost to the Patriots. It was the next year, I think, that they went to the Super Bowl. Because I felt like in his rookie year, Ben Roethlisberger got picked on by like Rodney Harrison, specifically in that playoff game.
Yeah, Maddox never won a Super Bowl. So I'm missing the one hit from that perspective. Although with Pittsburgh 1 year, yardage-wise, he had a 3,400-yard season, 18 touchdowns. He had a couple of mediocre seasons. He went 7-3-1 and then 6-10 as a starter for Pittsburgh in the early 2000s.
I'm looking at Timmy Smith, by the way. He had
Timmy.
A couple 100-yard games
he did
in 88 to start the year.
All right, well, still, I think of him, you know, I don't know if you'd remember Timmy Smith at all. I wouldn't.
Coming off the Super Bowl where he had 200 yards, they fed him. A little bit to start the next year.
A couple others vote, obviously, David Tyree in terms of one play. I think it'd be tough to top. Matt Flynn has been mentioned. Matt Flynn actually had two big games. Most people remember the second one where he threw six TDs against Detroit. The year prior, late in the year, Aaron Rodgers missed a game. They went on the road to New England. And I want to say, off the top of my head, it's like a 35-31 shootout, something like that, and put up tons of numbers, did not win the game, but had two big performances. Certainly the six touchdown one is the one that got more eyes on him.
No doubt.
Got that contract up in Seattle. Wonder how much money Matt Flynn actually collected in his career. $20 million? That'd be fair to say 10, an easy 10, right? Had to make 10, I would think. That contract, Tony, I want to say it was like 4 years, 32, got the signing bonus. Russell Wilson came in, took his job, what was presumed to be his job.
Sure.
And probably hung around for like 1 year and was probably on a few rosters after that.
Well, he was in New Orleans again last year.
So he's still kind of hanging around cash and checks.
Total earnings for Matt Flynn, $19.2 million.
Yeah. There you go, $20 million. It's pretty good if you're Matt Flynn.
He's bounced around. His first 4 years in Green Bay, then he went to Seattle, Oakland, back to Green Bay, Buffalo, back to Green Bay, New England, the Jets, and New Orleans. He played with all of them last year.
You've been pretty good like 2 days in your career. Made $20 million.
Yeah, it's not bad.
But I guess that those guys don't perform but 16 times a year anyway. Forget practice. Forget all that. You're paid for what you do on Sundays, really. So he had two big ones and got him $20 million. Hey, it's good work if you can get it.
No doubt. By the way, I want to say thank you to whoever it was that called. I can't remember the caller's name that mentioned the sea of hands game.
Yes.
Because I got to go back, and NFL.com actually had like a Raiders section where they had a highlight reel from that specific game. And look, I'm a young guy. I didn't get to watch Fred Biletnikoff play. And it was kind of cool watching the highlights with Stabler hooking up with Biletnikoff. He had an almost touchdown. He really thought it was, but they didn't have replay back in the day. And if you slowed it down, it looked like he might have got that first foot in on it. Would have been an acrobatic touchdown and got a second one where he dragged the foot to get a touchdown in that game. It was kind of cool watching that. And the sea of hands itself, look, it's one of those old school NFL plays where I'm watching like fans come off the sideline to congratulate him in the end zone. It's just, I know the film, like I've seen that play before, and it's like, wow, that there was a time when they even had this. And then it was like after the game, it's when Madden was getting carried off by the fans. Like, it's just, it's like there's no way that would ever exist again in the National Football League, but it did kind of in that time capsule of the 70s.
Right, security would have you laying face down on the ground if you're lucky, or they'd just be sprinting for the exits. That's pretty much how you see how guys do it even in the NBA now, Tony, where it's pretty controlled, and they go down that tunnel, right? They do their on-court interviews, and then they basically duck their head and make a sprint to the locker room.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of the world we've come to live in.
They lost the next week to the Steelers.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, you kind of figure that in the 70s with Oakland, and that was probably a good bet. Number of people asking on the text line, what about Rob Johnson? We talked about Rob Johnson right from the beginning of the show.
We did.
Today, from a Jaguar perspective, who gave you more for one game than Rob Johnson? He gave you the Fred Taylor career that he had here in Jacksonville. That's what he gave you. Thank you very much, Rob. That does it for us today. Thanks to John Osier for stopping by today. Thanks to Brent Martineau for popping in as well. Tomorrow, I believe Ryan O'Halloran, Jags, will be back on the practice field Thursday and Friday this week, with four OTAs scheduled, OTA practice scheduled for next week. So we'll chronicle all of that. Stick around, because the Midday Chalk is coming up. For Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
That's great job.
You guys have a good day. Peace.